Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this bi-weekly call with the SaaS expert. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I am a growth and team performance coach, and I help SaaS founders to get unstuck, clarify marketing priorities, and grow high-performing remote teams. Some of you are part of the ongoing peer-to-peer group that I host, and I received a bunch of questions for you already. If you are not part of the Mastermind group, be sure to drop your questions in the chat here below in the comments, and I'd love to welcome my guest, Scott Sambucci. Scott?
Hey.
So Scott is the chief sales geek at Sales Qualia, where he works with B2B SaaS companies to ramp up and scale up their sales. Scott is a startup coach, speaker, podcaster, and a best-selling author. He has spent 25 years building and selling enterprise technology products at two publicly traded companies. He also led three Silicon Valley startups, each to their first million in revenue. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom with the SaaS Boss community.
Cool. That's a great intro. I love that. Thank you very much, Natalie. Excited to be here. The theme that we're going to talk about today is the idea of going from idea to impact. And I'm going to teach you and show you the nine sales accelerators. These are nine selling systems that every B2B startup needs to get built and implemented in order to grow and scale. So whether you just want to launch a SaaS startup, or number two, maybe you've got a company up and running, you've got a product that you've been selling, and you're trying to figure out how to get from startup mode into ramp up and scale up mode, or maybe you're in that third bucket already. You've gotten some revenue, you're driving that forward, and you're getting to the point where you're starting to scale your startup. I think you're in any three of those cases, you're going to get a lot out of the time that we've got today. So the first place you want to start, there's basically two models I want to teach you today. The first, like I said, is called idea to impact. And when you think about idea to impact, think of this as a macro model. This is the journey that you're going to go through, or the journey that you're in right now as a SaaS startup founder over the course of years, right? So getting really clear about, like, what is the journey that you're on? What are the obstacles? What are the challenges? What are the steps you need to take along the way to get from idea to impact? So that's the first thing we're going to talk about. And the second thing we're going to talk about are what I call the nine sales accelerators. And we're going to fill out this three circle Venn diagram in the time that we've got as well. So when we talk about idea to impact, whenever I work with a founder of a company, the first thing that I ask them is, like, you know, why did you start your company? And almost always, right, they begin with a story about a problem that they saw in the marketplace. So it could be that they're in a certain industry like banking or payments, and they said, hey, international payments are broken, they need to be fixed. And I came up with this idea for how they could be better, right? And so every single company starts with this idea, this basic light bulb moment where you're like, hey, I got this idea, right? So you're starting here at the beginning of your journey. And that's just the start, though, because the reason you're starting your company, when I talk to, again, pretty much any founder out there, you're solving problems for a market. You're really shifting the way that a problem is being solved, or that it's finally getting solved in a marketplace. So we start with idea, and we want to get to is a place where we're making an impact. And so that journey usually looks something like this. So it starts off kind of slow, takes a long time, and then you start to pick up speed as you start to grow. And so what I found in working with startups is that there's kind of these three distinct phases that every startup goes through. And the first phase is what we call the startup phase. This is truly, hey, we're going from idea to your minimal viable product, getting that first product launched, getting those first couple of customers. You're just trying to get, you know, almost into the garage and then get out of the garage, so to speak. The second phase that you're going to go through is what we call the ramp up phase. And this is where you're sort of working your way out of this true startup, first couple of customers, does the product work sort of phase. to a place where you're starting to ramp up your sales. You're starting to ramp up your company and its growth. And that's where the curve starts to pick up steam a little bit as well. And then we move into this third phase, which we call the scale-up phase. And this is the fun phase. This is the phase that we all read about on TechCrunch. This is the place we all want to get to, is build a product, get some customers, and then what? Scale, right? That's what the investors are telling you. You got to figure out how to scale your company. And so we can't just jump right from startup to ramp up. We have this intermediate phase called ramp up. From startup to scale up, we have this intermediate phase. And so what's important is to then sort of define, what are the goals here? Like, how do we know we're graduating out of startup phase and moving into ramp up phase? How do we know we're graduating out of ramp up phase and actually moving to a place where we can start to scale? And so the way I think about this is, if we just kind of divide up these three phases, typically in that startup phase, what you really want to do from a SaaS standpoint, and this is we're talking obviously in a B2B context, selling to the enterprise, selling to other customers, other businesses. You know, the primary goal in that startup phase is to get your first 10 paying customers, your first 10 paying customers, right? Now I use the word 10, or I use the number 10. Why do I use 10? Well, 10 is more than one, right? That means you're starting to see a little bit of repeatability in the problem that you solve, right? You could have one customer that's using your product, but really that could just be technology-enabled consulting, right? But getting to 10 sort of forces you to identify other companies that have this problem, but it's a small enough number that you're not trying to get to 100 or 1,000 or more. And the keyword I use here is paying customers. There's a lot of temptation and there's a lot of advice out there around why you should maybe give away your product for free, or you're just trying to get users, you're trying to get feedback. And while that's important, I've always felt like the most important way to establish whether or not you're truly generating value for your customers is to ask and get money. That's what we use in this world. I give you money because I believe I'm getting value from the product that you're delivering to me. So, you know, that the money that you're getting, the price that you're charging probably is less than you want to charge down the road. It probably doesn't capture all of the value that you're creating for your customer. But it's important from a selling standpoint, especially those of you that are just starting out, you've got to get in the habit of asking for the business. You have to get in the habit of asking for money, because it's sort of an easy cop-out to say, well, we have lots of users on the platform. And in a lot of ways, that could be a vanity metric to say, well, we have 100 users on the platform, or we have 10. I had a call yesterday with a founder. He said, well, I've got 4 pilots running right now. And I said, that's great. How much are you charging for the pilots? And he said, well, they're free pilots. I said, well, then they're not pilots. You have free trials. There's a difference. Because when people pay, they pay attention, right? So crossing that penny gap, getting those dollars in the door with those first 10 customers is absolutely critical for you in order to establish whether or not you're generating value for your target customers. And so in this startup phase, there's kind of 3 specific steps. Almost think of them as obstacles along the way. And those 3 specific steps that you need to overcome is, number 1, what we're trying to accomplish here is what we call product problem fit. Product problem fit. Notice I didn't say product market fit, it's problem product fit. Before you get product market fit, the first thing we have to do is establish whether or not the product we built solves the problem that we're setting out to solve. Right, you came up with this company on an idea, you want to solve a problem, you built the product. Do we have problem product fit? That's the first thing. That's why we're asking for our first customers. That's the second main objective here in this phase. Let's find those first customers. And then the third main objective is, let's generate some revenue. And again, could be a small amount of revenue, it could be way undercharging relative to where you want to charge later on down the road in your company's life, later on down the road when you start to better fulfill the long-term product roadmap. But for now, we just got to figure out, do we have problem product fit? Can we get some customers? Who are those early customers and how do we get revenue from them? If you do those things and you get to 10 paying customers, then pat yourself on the back, congratulate yourself, give yourself a diploma and say, great, I graduated. I'm out of startup phase. I can move into ramp up phase. Now, it's not, of course, that clear. That's why these models overlap a little bit. You want to transition out of startup phase and move into a ramp up phase. You might find customer 7, 8, and 9, you're kind of hitting your rhythm a little bit, but then customer 10, 11, 12, you maybe still have to offer a pilot. Maybe you still are looking to undercharge relative to you want. It's more important to get customer number 12 than it is to try to optimize on revenue. it's not perfect, but there's going to be this time where you're transitioning out of, hey, we're getting pretty good at figuring out who has this problem. We're getting pretty good at solving the problem. We're getting pretty good at asking for money. Now we move into ramp up mode. And ramp up mode, the goal here is to focus on that drive up to that $1 million ARR mark. And again, I use 10 as a benchmark. $1 million is just a benchmark. The reason $1 million becomes a benchmark is, number one, if you've ever talked to any investors about a Series A round of capital, most of them will tell you, well, once you get to $1 million in ARR, then we can talk about a Series A. And it's not that they really care about the cash. Can you generate $1 million in revenue? It's that they know that in this early stage, when you're in startup mode, all you're trying to do is prove out viability of the company, right? The second stage, and this is why investors are looking for that $1 million ARR, they know in order to get to $1 million in ARR, you have to have some form of repeatability. And what we mean by that specifically, the three challenges or the three ways that you know you're moving through the ramp up phase is getting repeatability in terms of how you generate leads. How do you fill the funnel? What are your systems for lead generation? Whether that's outbound email systems, using LinkedIn, running webinars, going to events or hosting virtual events, whatever you know will fill the funnel, generate leads for you in a repeatable, predictable way. That's a system you need to build. The second thing we need repeatability on is our sales pipeline, meaning that we should know once the deal is qualified, what are the steps that we need to bring our buyer through in order to get them from interested to paying, right? There should be a process there. There needs to be repeatability so we can map every single customer and know where are we in each deal. And then the third area where we need repeatability is around your paying customers, meaning that you should start to see some repeatability around your pricing structure. You should start to see repeatability on how you're onboarding and implementing. You should see repeatability in terms of how you're retaining customers and reselling them down the road. So that when the investor tells you, you need to see $1 million in ARR, it's not about the cash flow. It's they know to get to $1 million in revenue, you have to have some of these systems in place. And that's ultimately what they want to invest in. They want to invest in this process to make the process better. Because if you don't have a process, that money is just going to disappear, right? So once you've gone through that ramp up phase, same thing. You know, you start to generate, whether it's $1 million or $2 or $3 million in revenue, you'll start to see, okay, like we kind of know how to get leads in our market. We kind of know how to get deals converted. We kind of know how to price this thing. That's when you know you're ready for this transition into scale up phase. And scale up phase is where you actually elevate yourself in your own company. Because in that startup and ramp up phase, you're probably, as the founder, still doing a lot of the selling. Certainly in the startup phase, you are the salesperson. In the ramp up phase, you're probably more like an account executive. You might hire an SDR to help you with lead gen once you know how to go out and get leads. You might hire somebody on customer success to help you implement and support customers, but you're still probably doing the main core communication with your customers in order to get them converted, right? But once you've got those systems, now you can scale. And what that means is you're going to elevate yourself up in the organization. And the first thing we need to do is know what are our metrics, because we're going to eventually, the second thing we need to do is hire a team. And the third step here is we need to know how to manage that team, because we step away or step up out of the day-to-day selling. And instead we should be looking at the company as a system. We need to know what the metrics are, what dials we should be paying attention to. We need to find people that are going to run these systems that we built back in the ramp up phase and make them better. And we need to know how to manage those people, who to hire, when to hire, when to fire if that's necessary, when to move people around in the organization. And so that scale up phase is that sort of race to that $10 million ARR mark and beyond. And this is where you get true scalability. So from startup to ramp up to scale up, you go from viability to repeatability and from repeatability to scalability. And if you sort of work your way along this journey on this path, that's what's going to get you on the path from idea to impact. And if you try to skip steps, if you try to go from startup to scale up without getting systems in place, then you're going to fail. You're not going to get up that curve. So let me just do a quick pause here before we jump into the 9 sales accelerators and see if we have any questions or any comments. Natalie?
We don't have any questions yet.
So the second startup where I was a head of sales is a company called Altos Research. And one of the product lines is a $79 a month product that we sold to real estate agents. And the company founder, on his own, working from a coffee shop and a rented workspace that he was subletting, he got the first 75 on his own. And when he brought me in, he said, look, I got these 75 customers. I got about like 180K in revenue, but I got to go faster now. So it was my job to take his 18 months of work to get 75 customers to figure out how do we go from 75 customers in 18 months to 75 customers in a quarter and then 75 customers in a month, right? So it does vary based on your situation. So don't get wed to 10. It's just more about thinking about the viability of your problem product fit. How do we get customers? How do we get revenue? And then you can move into the ramp up and then the scale up phase. I always think about founders, like you're some of the most, you're like the bravest people in the business world. It's like, you're the hero. You've got your sword, you've got your shield, and you got to like go into the woods and slay your dragons. That's kind of what this is you've got to go through that jungle. You've got to go through the woods and find these dragons and slay them in order to keep moving to get to the, you know, get to the big castle at the end, for example. So this, a lot of times people just, it's helpful to get a sense for what's the now stuff and what's the later stuff. So if you're just starting off, don't worry about hiring salespeople. Don't worry about getting repeatable lead gen. All you want to do is find those first customers, get problem product fit, get some money in the door, prove viability of the company, and then you can start worrying about the.
I know, right? And I speak to so many founders, and just earlier today in my mastermind group, one of the founders said that, you know, I hired, they have one paying customers, and they're like, I hired a business development person. You know, do you see that this is a big problem? Because just because founders do not feel comfortable reaching out and doing this cold outreach, it feels sleazy, cheesy for them.
If it feels sleazy, you're doing it the wrong way. Because let's remember, why did you start your company? You started the company because you want to solve problems. If you're not a salesperson, right, by background like me, but you're an engineer, you're a product person, maybe you're a marketing person, like you started this company because you wanted to solve problems. So if your outreach feels sleazy, maybe it just tells you that the messaging you're using isn't about problem solving. It's about you trying to pitch and sell and get demos. I almost feel like if you honestly, like truly want to solve this problem, you owe it to your market to go out there and talk about this product, to go out there and talk about their problem, to offer to help. Because if you don't do that, if you don't figure out how to sell your product, there ain't no way you can teach somebody else how to sell your product. Nobody's going to teach it for you. The only person that's going to learn how to do it the right way is you.
I heard this quote somewhere. It is your moral obligation. If you have a solution to someone and you know that that's going to help someone, it is your moral obligation to go ahead and pitch it to them or, you know, share it to them, get them to help them
absolutely
solve the problem that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why, like, just as a quick example, and one of the things you can do to get some more help on some of this stuff is I wrote a book last year that was a number one new release on Amazon called Stop Hustling, Start Scaling. Now we sell the book on Amazon or our website at salesquality.com. You can actually download a free and complete copy of the book, a whole PDF version of the book. And the reason we do that is like, I feel like it's my obligation to make it easy for people to read this book. If I make it hard for them and they feel like, oh, he's just trying to make some money off of the book. Like, I don't care about royalties in the book. What I care about is helping founders. So I'm just going to give the book away because I don't care about that. What I care about is helping people. And you should feel the same way when you're talking about your product and you're looking for people who have that problem. If you're on LinkedIn and you can see that there's an executive at a company that likely has the problem that you solve and you don't reach out to that person, that'd be like walking by a swimming pool and seeing somebody like really struggling, trying to grab the side. And you're like, maybe they're just playing around. Maybe they need help, but I don't want to help them. Why would you do that? Of course you wouldn't do that. Now it's an extreme case, but from a model standpoint, think about your customers as people struggling in the pool or people that might be lost in the city. They have this map and they don't know where to go. It's your job to lead them, because if you don't, they're just going to be lost.
So Scott, we're so excited. Let's hear your 9 sales accelerators.
Yeah. So this key piece, like this middle piece of this journey, right? This is almost like your keystone. If you're familiar with that idea, it's like, you know, a lot of companies get that startup mode and you get those first few customers. But if you don't figure out how to get past startup mode and start creating some repeatability, what ends up happening is you eventually will die out, right? Because you don't have that repeatability that you need. It's just too hard of a struggle. You're running out of cash. You're undercharging people for too long, and you're not going to make it, right? Now, the second challenge is that you can get this repeatability stage, but if you're trying to get to scale, but you haven't built these systems, what ends up happening is that you'll end up leveling out. So in order to really get out of startup and into ramp up and to make sure that once you get to scale up, you've got the core systems for your team to run, you've got to get what we call the 9 sales accelerators built. 9 sales accelerators. So you've got a notebook. You can just draw a 3-circle Venn diagram and just think about it this way, right? Where we want to go with this is we want to make an impact. That's the focus of the nine sales accelerators. You want to get on the path to making an impact. And what that means is you want to have clarity, you want to have some control, and you want to have confidence in your sales process. You want to have clarity on who you're targeting and why you're targeting and what problem you solve. You want to have control so that when you engage in those conversations, you always have next steps and you can help that person along their buying process. And you want to have confidence to know you can solve that problem so you can charge the price you deserve to charge. And your customer should have confidence to know that, hey, if we pay this money, we're going to get the outcome we want, right? That's how you know you're making an impact, is that you have clarity, control, and confidence. And so from a tactical standpoint, what that means is, number one, we need to have what's called a prospecting plan of action. A prospecting plan of action, meaning we need to have a way of going out and finding our future customers and teaching them about our problem and bringing them into our sales funnel. The second thing we need to have is what we call pipeline pull through. So once we have a sales opportunity in our sales pipeline, we need to be able to pull it through the pipeline to go from interested and qualified through to the third phase, which is paying customer. So you can think about these three areas as your pillars of your repeatable sales process. So around these pillars is where we start thinking about the nine sales accelerators. These are the core systems that if you build and implement these will accelerate your sales process and accelerate your growth. So the first one is what we call funnel fillers. We need to have a way of filling the funnel every day, every week. So again, for some people, that's having a target list and you're doing an effective outbound email campaign. For other people, it's using LinkedIn. It could be running webinars. It could be, you know, using a podcast. Whatever it takes in order to reach your market and fill your funnel, you need to have a system. If you don't have a system for filling the funnel, it's just going to slow you down because you're going to be sitting around and then all of a sudden an email, somebody requests a demo. You're like, holy shit, we got a lead. Yahoo. Like if you're in that situation, that's really bad. Like you should be able to look away from your lead gen, go work with customers, go work with product, go talk to investors and come back at the end of the day or the end of the week and go, oh yeah, cool. We got 20 more leads just like I thought, right? That's why you need to have a funnel filling strategy in order to accelerate your sales. The second thing we need to have is you need to establish your authority voice. And this goes back to the idea of having a moral obligation to reach your market. Because again, you started this company with an idea. You saw a problem that wasn't getting solved or wasn't getting solved the right way. And you know more about that problem. There's nobody in the world thinking about this problem more than you. You know more about this problem than your customers probably do. So it's your job to create that authority voice, right? So you should be thinking about how do you teach your customers about their problem? How do you educate them so you can separate away from the old stuff and teach them the new way of doing things? If you think about some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world, right? They had this authority voice where people are like, they were almost like leading a crusade for the cause. And you need to be comfortable creating that authority voice. And that's going to be useful for you in the sales process because it's going to help you filter out who's interested in following you and who just wants to see a demo. And then the third piece here is what we call lead qualification. And the reason this accelerates your sales is that it helps you make sure you're only spending time with those companies, those prospects who are actually in a position to make a purchase, who actually want to make a purchase. So too many times I see things like request a demo on a website and people request a demo and you spend an hour and you show the product. And at the end of the demo, you get a bunch of applause and people say, send me a proposal. And you spend all weekend sending a proposal. And you know, when they get back to you on the 19th and never, and they get back to you on the 19th and never because they weren't qualified in the first place. So by adding this step, you're actually going to accelerate your sales process. Even if that means telling some people you don't get a demo because maybe you're the wrong person or you're the wrong type of company. Or the timing isn't right. You have to be comfortable qualifying people out just as much as you need to want people to be qualified in. If you do that, it's going to accelerate your sales.
I heard this. One of the stories I heard just today where the founder spent almost entire hour on a demo with a person who didn't even have the system that they had to have in order to make use of this SaaS integration. So they had to have a HubSpot and they're like, what's a HubSpot? So
yeah, exactly. 100%. It could be something as simple as that, or it could be, you know, you think about the people who makes decisions in organizations, it's typically people higher up in the organization. Who's the easiest people to get a hold of? People lower in the organization. So just because somebody lower in the organization requests a demo doesn't mean they get a demo. Like we got to figure out where do they fit into the organization? How do we know if they have influence? Just because they think there's a problem with this company, does the person who has the budget, do they even know that this problem exists? Or is this just somebody complaining every day because they're using spreadsheets and they're tired of using spreadsheets? So these are all the things, these are all the strategies that you have to implement at the top of your funnel to know who you should be spending time with because time is your most precious resource right now. Yeah.
In this instance, Scott, a question then. If a lower level person requests a demo, would you ask for a higher level, the decision making person, to also be on this demo?
I would require it. We teach that to our clients. We have a specific strategy on how you navigate through an organization that enables you to be talking to all of the stakeholders even before the demo, so you understand what their needs are, understand if there's really a problem here, how severe that problem is, so that going into the demo, you have all the stakeholders in the room to know whether or not they should be moving forward.
Do you have a polite way, like a couple of sentences that we can use to email this person and say, hey, we'd like to also have your boss on the call?
I wouldn't do it on an email. I would do it on a phone call. I would say, hey, Natalie, it sounds like from your perspective, this is really a challenge that your organization has. I can't imagine what it's like every day having to deal with spreadsheets and SharePoint. And it sounds to me like you're the kind of person we love to help every single day. So we work with companies like you all the time. And one of the things that we have found is that people like you get so excited about our product, but then when it comes time to ask for the budget, then the person who's a step or two or three above you, they just don't understand what you're going through every day. And so what we found, it's really, really important that we want to make sure that person has a look at our product so they can see exactly how it's going to help you, which at the end of the day is really going to help them because they're going to get more out of you. So let's figure out a way, maybe we just have a quick chat with your senior vice president, just to make sure that she's really clear that like this is an issue for you and that maybe, just maybe, we could be a solution for you. And then from there, we can figure out what the next steps are. Doesn't that seem reasonable?
Love it. Love it. So then you basically make it, show it that the benefit to them, that it's not
absolutely
their boss to be there, but explaining the benefit to them.
Of course. Yeah. Nobody wants to feel like you're pushing them aside. It's like, oh, I'm really glad we had this conversation with Natalie. She's the assistant vice president, but I can't wait to push her aside and get to the senior vice president. No, of course not. I mean, let's face it. I mean, this person, if you're that initial point of contact for me, Natalie, I mean, let's face it. It took some steps for you. You got frustrated. You took the step. You got on the call. You spent your time. You're doing all these things. Now we should partner together and work together and make sure that you get the credit when we go talk to the SVP. Like, man, I didn't even know that your company existed. If it wasn't for Natalie spending the time and researching our solution and asking for us to talk about how we might be able to help her, gosh, we wouldn't even be here. So first of all, big credit to Natalie. Really glad that she reached out. So let's talk about your situation, SVP. Like, how is this inability for her to do her work every day, how is that affecting your business? So that's truly a partnership. And that actually brings us to the next sales accelerator. So now we've got a qualified deal, now they're in that proverbial pipeline, right? And so the next sales accelerator we need to do is have what we call demo design. Like, how are you structuring your demos to show how your product solves problems, not giving them the harbor tour, not showing them and explaining to them why your buttons are blue and not red, not showing them how to log in, right? Getting all the key stakeholders involved with that demo early on. And again, if you do it the wrong way, it's going to slow your whole process down. If you're doing one demo for one person and then hoping that person after the demo gets a one pager from you and then they run out of the flagpole and hope 7 weeks later that somebody else is interested in seeing the demo, that's way too slow. But if we do it the right way, we get the stakeholders involved, we understand their needs, we show them how we're going to solve the problem. The demo is actually a short, quick step from early stage opportunity to like, oh, this could solve our problems. What's next? So I always think about demo is not a stage in your sales process. We want to get in and out of demo as quickly as possible. It should be a catalyst or a springboard to the rest of the sales process. That's why if you do it right, it's an accelerator. So after we've done the demo the right way, the next system is you need to have a way of prospect partnering. Because coming out of that product demo, there's going to be all kinds of questions people are going to have. How does this work? Does it integrate with HubSpot? How many seats do we need? How secure is your platform? All of those questions that people are going to have. So we're going to need some help from your prospect in order to get those questions answered, in order to get access to the chief risk officer, to get access to the IT people who are going to have to look at our APIs and our SDKs. So coming out of that demo, one of the systems we need to have is a way to work with our prospect to move this through. It can't be us pushing the deal, right? We should be together, be pulling it through to completion. And then the last system here is every sale, there's a reason for things to slow down. We've seen big external shocks like coronavirus, macroeconomic slowdowns, but then there's micro reasons, right? Vacations. Today, my son's going back to school. It's his first day of school online. He's 8 years old. Guess what? It's going to slow my life down. It just is. It's just the way the world is, right? People are working from home. People go on paternity leave. I have one of our key members of our team. So on paternity leave right now. It's going to slow us down. There's a reason for things to slow down. So it's our job in sales is to make sure that we are maintaining momentum. So I call them momentum maintainers. How do we make sure that we keep that deal moving? Because there's all kinds of reasons for it to slow down. Ah, geez, Bob's out of the office right now. Or, oh, geez, we can't take action right now because we have these other priorities. It's our job to keep that thing moving. And again, if you have these, if you have a set of systems to help keep deals moving, it's going to accelerate your sales. And now finally, the last three, right? It's like, okay, we've done our good job filling the funnel. We've qualified our deals. We've pulled them through our pipeline. Now it's decision time. How do we get them to take decisions quickly and decide to work with us? There's three things we need to do. One, we need to look at what we call why buy. So in other words, how do we show that our product is a return on investment, right? If you're hearing from people, ah, geez, it's a really cool platform, but it's just too expensive for us. What they're telling you is you're a cost, not an investment, right? So it's our job to make sure our customers know if you make this purchase, this is the return you will get. Sure, it's $100,000 a year to buy our product. And when you buy it and implement it, you're going to get a $10 million return in terms of reduced cost or higher efficiency or reduction of risk or increased revenue, whatever that is for that customer. We need to make sure they're clear and they articulate to us what the ROI is going to be for them. And when you do this, it accelerates sales. Otherwise, that's where deals can stall, right? The eighth system is what we call risk reducers. Now, I'm kind of an old guy. I'm 46. So there used to be this show called The X-Files. I don't know if anybody knows this show. You know the show. David Duchovny was one of the main characters.
Yep.
And in his office, he had this big poster of a UFO. And on the UFO poster, it said, I want to believe. I want to believe. I don't know why that image is always stuck in my mind, but I think about that a lot when I'm talking to enterprise customers, right? Because think about their situation, right? They're responsible for solving this problem. They've now spent weeks or months with you. There's going to be a potentially significant cash outlay. They're going to spend this money with you. Not to mention the time and the resources and the people that they're going to be spending in order to implement for you. But at the end of the day, they're like looking at you and like they want to believe that your product's going to solve their problem. But there's just a lot of risk. You're just some startup. You're some early stage company. How do we know that this is going to work for us? And so by risk reducers, that's where you're having systems like pilot programs or proof of concepts or phased rollouts, a way to help reduce the perception of risk, so that you can prove success early and then continue on and make it easy for them to say yes to the next step. We have to reduce that risk. It's our job as salespeople to reduce that risk in the eyes of the customer. Because even if they don't tell us that they're a little worried or they're a little concerned we're not going to come through for them, trust me, they're thinking it. Because they don't want to lose their job. They don't want to get criticized. They don't want to spend that political and financial capital on the wrong decision. And they're just worried. They want to believe, but they're worried. And it's our job to remove that worry by reducing risk.
And for the accelerators numbers 9 and 8, do you ask for this information on a specific stage during the demo, before the demo?
Yeah, that's a great question. So number 7 is the why buy analysis. This is usually something, this is where they start to stack on each other, right? So if you do the demo the right way, coming out of the demo, there's probably going to be some questions about integration and functionality and feature set and how do we train and how do we onboard, right? That's why you need to have a good prospect partnering system to work with that counterpart on the other side to move this deal through. You need to make sure that you keep the momentum if things slow down, and then you're going to get to decision time. And it's part of our job then to say, okay, look, we're going to put together a proposal, but gosh, like before I just put a big number down on this document, let's just make sure we take a couple minutes here or maybe take an hour. Let's do some ROI analysis. Like, hey, what is this problem costing you right now? And what happens if you don't solve it? What happens if you do solve it? Okay, cool. So it sounds like this is a $10 million problem a year for you, huh? Yeah, cool. So if you implement our software, it sounds like that problem goes away. Is that right? Yeah. So we're looking at a $100,000 product is going to solve a $10 million problem. That's pretty good ROI, right? Yeah. Okay, cool. So now we're clear on that. Then we move to the next step. Okay, so let's just say you're on board with the ROI, but you're probably a little worried right now. Like, are we going to be able to come through for you? Well, what if we ran a pilot first? Or what if we did a stage rollout? Or what if we did a proof of concept, right? So these all kind of stack on each other, because then this brings us all the way to the last part of the sale, which is your customer success strategy. And the reason this is part of the sale is that it's our job as salespeople to teach and show our customers how we're going to support them. Not after contract, not like, hey, sign this document and then we'll talk about implementation. No. We talk about implementation before, and sometimes it's all the way back here. Maybe it's during the demo we talk a little bit about implementation. But the more we can show them how we're going to support them, how are we going to get them online in the first week? What results can they expect in the first month? What happens at the end of the first quarter? Show them that customer success strategy, and it becomes an accelerator in the sale because it reduces the risk. It helps them feel more comfortable with the decision, and it becomes like almost like a plan of action for them to know they're going to get the results that you want to get them and that they want to get for themselves. So when you're thinking about building out that repeatable sales process, these are the 9 systems that we talk about with all of our clients. It's like having this prospecting plan of action to fill the funnel, lead your customers by teaching them about the problem with authority voice, and then make sure you qualify them before you spend too much time. Now they're in your pipeline. You need a pipeline pull-through strategy, which includes how you're running your demos, prospecting, prospect partnering, and keeping momentum when things get slow. And then finally, when it comes to decision time, that conversion from pipeline to customer, we got to show them and they got to show us what return on investment they're going to get, how we're going to help reduce the risk, the perceived risk, and then use our customer success strategy as part of the sales process to help them feel confident to take the action that we want them to take, and also help us feel confident to charge the price we want to charge. So if you get these 9 systems working, that's where you get the repeatability that you're looking for. That's why a venture capitalist, a VC, is going to go, hey, you're $1 million in revenue. That's probably an indication that you have these systems in place. And imagine that conversation you're having with an investor. If you could show them as part of your presentation deck, this is how we generate leads repeatedly. This is how we're leading the market. This is our entire sales process. And by the way, if you give us, you know, $5 million in Series A, now I can go hire more an SDR to run the lead gen. I can hire an account executive to help us do these demos. I can hire a customer success team and a sales engineer to help on implementation. Now you're giving that investor much more visibility about how your company operates, and they're going to feel a lot more confident to make that investment. So that's it. Those are my 2 models that I wanted to present you. Macro view, idea to impact, and then a much more micro view about the sales accelerators that you want to build out in order to get out of startup and through the ramp up mode so that you can scale up and make an impact.
Awesome. Drop your questions in the comments here. We have a question from Donald saying, should you release a demo or a paid product first?
Should you release a demo or a paid product first? Does that mean a demo product or a paid product?
Correct. Donald, I think what you mean is even before building the full product.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think absolutely. Like, I just did a podcast interview yesterday, and I told a story. I'll keep it pretty short. I was the first head of sales at a company called Blend. So Blend is a lending company. They were in the news about 2 weeks ago because they're now a $1.7 billion company. So years ago, I was the first head of sales before we really had any product built. We had a platform, we had some workflows, but the product really wasn't done. And we got this meeting with a top 5 lending company in the United States. And it was with the president of this company. There's a company that's doing like billions of dollars a year in mortgages. And the problem is we didn't have a product. So I'm in New York City in January on like the 40th floor of this high rise. And you know how we demo the product? We use Flinto. If you've never used Flinto, you've never heard of Flinto, it's basically like PowerPoint on steroids. It makes it look like you have working software. You click a button on the screen and it moves to the next page, but it's not actually working software. That's what we use for the product demo. And the reason we did that, we knew that sales needed to be at least 6 months ahead of product, because a company that big, the guy wasn't going to look at the demo in January and go, hey, let's do it, you know, sign a contract and be off and running in February. It's a long sales process. And so that process, that demo was in January. We ended up signing a contract in June, but you have to get comfortable with showing your product and selling your product, because in our case, it worked out because what we were building and what we had mocked up in Flinto aligned with what their needs were. But if you're just starting off and you're trying to get those first customers, like the sooner you can start showing and selling your product, you're going to learn all kinds of stuff about features people need, people, what people like, what people don't like, what are their true needs versus what you think their needs are. So, and the best way to really figure out if somebody's interested, not just like, hey, would you buy this thing? But like, here's the product. And oh, by the way, you know, if you want to use it, it's $50 a month. Do you have a credit card?
Love that example, because what majority of people that I talk to do, they actually spend months, if not a year, of their life building the product, and then they're kind of maybe even too scared to bring it to market, trying to make it perfect because they don't want people to reject what they've spent an investment so much time into building. Right?
The product's never going to be done. I don't know if anybody. There was a couple years ago, a few years ago, there was a biography of Leonardo da Vinci that came out, and I didn't know this until I read the book. The Mona Lisa is not finished. He never finished the Mona Lisa. he worked on that painting until the day he died. He was constantly, for years, for like 13 years, he worked on this painting, right? That's your product. It's never going to be done. It's never going to be done. So you need to be comfortable showing what it is and be willing to accept feedback and be willing to ask for money, because that's the only way you're going to know whether or not what you've built so far is adding value. And even if it doesn't meet all of the long-term product roadmap stuff you want to do, even if it does one thing that solves a key problem for a person, my friend Sean Murphy shared this quote with me. He said, people in pain accept partial solutions. People in pain accept partial solutions. That person's in pain and you can solve at least part of that pain. They're like, you know what? I got no other options. This is good enough. Here's $50 a month. I'll take it.
I love it. Jean Michael is asking, how is product market fit different from problem market fit?
Yeah. So problem product fit, you've started your company. This is early stage, right? You came up with an idea for your company, for your product, probably based on a problem that you solve, right? You solve a problem in the market. Nobody is doing this. Everybody's using spreadsheets for that, right? And so you build that first version of your product. The idea in this startup phase is you just want to see if there's a match between what you've built and the problem that you intended to solve. So that's why it's called product problem, that you're seeing if the product fills the gap, at least partially. And the only way to know that is to know if you're adding value to someone is to ask for money. Later on, after you've done that repeatedly, then you start to emerge, okay, who are the other customers and companies that have this problem? And you start to expand out to a full market. And that's where the repeatability piece here is where you start to move towards product market fit. Because then you know, hey, this particular market segment, this is where we get leads. This is the people we need to talk to in order to get a decision. This is how we're going to pull them through our sales pipeline. Once you get that piece working, then you get move closer to product market fit. In the earliest stage, you're just trying to get problem product fit.
Jean Michael is asking as a follow-up question, we know we solve a problem in a good way. People hire our software to do that, but we're not sure we have a product market fit yet, as we don't have a clear pattern of customers yet. That's the same problem we went through with my husband SaaS, where we weren't sure which industry we were serving. And so our landing page and homepage were speaking to everyone. And only when we actually took a list of all of our clients and allocated that to different industries did we start seeing some patterns. And then we've implemented different landing pages that would target different industries, right? But if your website's speaking to everyone, you can, and you do not do a specific industry, specific outreach efforts, you cannot really expect that specific industry is going to, you know, come to you more with a specific problem, right? What's your take on that, Scott?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that the challenge that a lot of us have, especially if you found a critical problem, once you see that problem and once you start working on it, it's kind of hard for you personally to unsee it. Like, you see it everywhere. Like, it's sort of like when somebody says, think about blue cars, everywhere you go, you start to see blue cars, you notice this problem anywhere. And so you get like enamored with, like, wow, there's so much opportunity out here. We can help the healthcare space and the telecom space and the financial markets. And you're like, wow, this is like $100 billion total market, total addressable market. It's like, maybe, right? But for now, you got to focus on getting those first 10 customers and then getting to 1 million and then getting to 3 and then getting to 10, right? Think about any company think about Amazon, right? Now, while that's in the consumer space, they started with books. They didn't start with books because Jeff Bezos was like some big bookworm and spent lots of time in the library. He started with books because they were easy to ship and easy to source. But he proved the model on books. And then they got into lawn furniture and cat food and everything else that they're doing now, right? So Facebook, again, a consumer example, started off at college campuses, Ivy League schools, and then grew from there. So there's a great quote from David Packard, from Hewlett Packard, who said, most companies, most organizations don't die of starvation, they die of indigestion. And Bill Gurley retweeted this a couple of years ago, and I've always remembered that quote, right? I'm glad there's a lot of opportunity, but if you're just starting off, like, you only get, dude, just get to $1 million in revenue. Just focus on that, because you can't get to 10 million until you get to 1 million, and you can't get to 1 million until you get to 100,000. You can't get 100,000 until you get your first customer. So just get the first one first. Then worry about the other ones.
Scott, I have a couple of practical questions. Do you hard close at the end of a demo and ask for a credit card, or do you just get them off the hook and whenever?
So a couple things there. Number one, I never use the word close, and I don't think you should either. The reason I don't use the word close is because it's a sales term. It's not a customer term. Customers never look at a demo and go, hey man, you closed me. Here's my credit card. Like, what does a customer say if you've talked to somebody who you've been talking to about your product and they decide they want to buy your product? What are the words they use? They usually say something like, let's get started. We'd like to get rolling. Let's begin, right? So what a salesperson views as the finish line, closing the sale, it's not a finish line, it's the starting line, right? So that's just a thing I got about using the word close. We think of them as conversions, converting them from pipeline to paying customers. Now, in terms of hard close, I think if you've established need ahead of the call, you've shown how your product fills that need, then a lot of times it's your responsibility to make it easy for people to buy. So you don't have to hard close them, but something like recapping the demo and say, hey, at the start of the call, you said you had these key problems. We just showed you the product and how it does this, this, and this. And if you implemented the product, you'd be able to get these results. Would you agree that this is a pretty good fit for the problem that you've got? And they go, yeah. I think, cool. Would you like to get started? I mean, something as simple as that. Or should we get started? Or should we give it a try? You want to give it a go? I mean, you don't have to like sit down and, you know, pressure them into a sale. It shouldn't feel like that. It should, if you're doing all of the other parts, if you're doing the right things in the sales process by finding the right leads and qualifying them and running your demos the right way, the buyers are almost like, okay, how do we move forward? How much is it? Do you guys take credit cards?
Got it. Another question. What are your recommended methods of approaching cold contacts via call, email, and LinkedIn, especially those that are allergic to salespeople, and go one step further? How do you recommend building a relationship with these contacts so that you can sell to them within the next 3 months?
People are not allergic to salespeople. They're allergic to shitty salespeople, right? If you're doing a good job of targeting, and this goes back to what Natalie was saying earlier, if you know your market, you know who you're targeting, you know who has that problem, right? And you do a good job in your messaging of not blasting them about your product and trying to book demos, but instead saying, hey, you know, not sure if this is a situation with you, but we work with healthcare companies that we have found oftentimes are using paper and pencil in order to handle compliance and, you know, OSHA standards. Here's a couple of examples of customers like you we've helped. Would it make sense for us to have a quick chat to see if we might be able to help you? It's a lot different than, hey, Scott, and then seven paragraphs of text. And at the bottom, here's my Calendly where you can book in an hour-long call so I can show you a product demo. Of course you do. Keep getting them for the next decade. Like, you're just going to. So people aren't allergic to salespeople. What they're allergic to is people who don't empathize with their situation and they don't empathize with understanding their problem. So instead, I would look at how are you doing your messaging in a way that's adding value to people, even if they don't reply. How can you add value to them? Can you share an article? Can you share an insight? Can you share a case study? What is something valuable that you can add to that person that isn't trying to push them into a call? And this is something we work with a guy named Jason Bay. Jason is basically a prospecting outbound ninja. He's a coach in our coaching program, and he works a lot with our clients every day on these outbound strategies. And he has a method he calls the reply method. And it's just about results, empathy. What is the other one? Reply method, R-P-E-P. P is proof, L is laser focused, and Y is makes it about them, about you, right? So if you structure your emails using this reply method, it will drastically increase your reply rates. And as far as the channels to use, the answer is all of them. Like if you're clear about your market segment and you know what kind of buyers you need to be approaching, you should be thinking about how do I weave together a multi-channel sequence where I'm pinging people on LinkedIn, where I'm sending them an email, maybe following up with a phone call so that I give them an opportunity to engage with us in a meaningful way.
Got it. Scott, I want to be conscious of your time. Can you still give us like 5 more minutes?
Yeah, real quick. Just, I mentioned this earlier, 2 things that I wanted to offer to your group if they want some more help. So number one, I mentioned the book a little bit earlier. If you go to Sales Qualia, which is right back here, salesqualia.com, right on the homepage is where you can download a copy of the PDF. Just pop in your email address and we'll send you the PDF. When you share your email address, the other thing I wanted to do is I can share with you a self-assessment. So we ran through an assessment training that I did with our clients about 6 weeks ago where I walked them through step by step. How are you doing? How would you score yourself on funnel fillers? How do you score yourself on authority voice? This is a diagnostic we do with our clients every 3 to 4 months just to kind of check in. And so it's an opportunity for you to look at your current sales process and say, okay, are we not doing so well? Are we like kind of a 1 where we're not filling the funnel, or are we doing pretty well? Are we a 3 or 4? And it will help you identify where you've got some gaps and weaknesses and maybe where you've got some relative strengths so that you can focus in on the places that are weak and help to improve those. So if you request a copy of the book, then I'll get your email address And then if you want the self-assessment, then we'll just send you out a note and ask you if you want it. And if you want, we'll send you a link to that training. So it's a way for you to at least get started with thinking about how are you implementing with these sales accelerators to, and then start getting to work on building out those systems. So, but that said, yeah, I can do about 4 or 5 more minutes for sure.
Sounds good. How do you sell a SaaS product during the recession when all spending is strictly monitored? And that's a question from our Rose
Avoid
team.
Absolutes. There's no all. There is no everyone. That's a lie. There is no all. It doesn't exist. People say everybody is cutting budgets. Nobody is buying right now. That's an excuse to not sell your stuff. Like, we work with companies in retail that were selling $1 million platforms to retailers. Now, retailers have been shut for months, from March until the end of lockdown. We're talking about companies like Walmart, right? The only thing they open their doors, and the only thing they care about is like getting toilet paper on the shelf, right? And if that customer is thinking like, oh, nobody's buying from us, nobody's buying right now because of lockdown, guess what? Of course they're not going to sell anything, right? If you solve a core problem for somebody, they need your help and they will spend the money. And that same client is about to launch a pilot with Walmart that could lead to a $1 million opportunity with them that's starting in September. So don't think in absolutes. And you have this luxury. You're never, ever going to have this luxury again. Remember this every day in your startup, right? Today, if you're just starting up, some of you said you're just starting your startup, you're here. Dude, the only thing you need to do is find 10 customers in the whole world. The global economy is like $85 trillion. If you can't find 10 people out of 85 trillion, you got a problem that's much bigger than global recession. And if you're here and you only got to get to $1 million, you only have to get to $1 million in revenue in the next 12 to 18 months. Like, never again in your company's history are you ever going to be able to look around at your team, look at your investors, look at all the people around you, go, we only have to grow by $1 million in 12 months. Because later on down the road, you're going to be worried about like, how do we grow $1 million a month? Or how do we grow $1 million a day? Like, you only have to find $1 million in customers in the next 12 to 24 months. You're never going to have this luxury again. Go find those people because they're out there. People are buying stuff.
Last question. Those 9 accelerators, which one, if you had to pick one, the lowest hanging fruit, which one would you say?
I'd start at the top. Like, I always tell people, start at the top and work your way down. So like using this assessment, let's just say you did this assessment and you said, look, we're actually like, we do pretty well with demos and we do well here. Like, we have like maybe some 2s down here. Authority voice, so like we're kind of low, low and low. Like, start from the top and work your way down. And the reason this is important is like, think about your entire sales workflow. Think of it as like a machine or a factory, you know? Inputs come in as leads, they come out as paying customers. Like, it's a Tesla factory. That's your sales process, right? Raw materials go in, on the other side comes out this beautiful car. And so if you're not sure where to start, start with filling the funnel. Because if you're not able to go out and find, if you don't know who to target, if you're not getting people to reply to your emails, if you're not getting people to connect with you on LinkedIn, if you can't fill your funnel, it doesn't matter if the other 8 are working because you got no one to use them on. So start from the top and work your way down and just keep going. And then as you get lower in the process, a lot of this stuff can be sort of just-in-time things that you build. Like, as you get a early customer through to the late stage, you don't necessarily already have to have a why buy strategy in place. It's just like, hey, let's sit down and figure out how to do an ROI assessment with this customer. And that first, just like you're building a product on the fly, sort of like build that system on the fly. And same with like pilot program. You don't have to know exactly how to run a pilot program. So that first customer can be your first test on how to run that thing. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the template for customer 2, 3, and 4. But definitely I would say if you're not sure where to start, just start from the top and work your way down. Because the most important thing you got to do is be able to fill the funnel, address your market, and get those early conversations. Otherwise, the rest of the process is just going to sit there and collect dust.
Awesome. That was very insightful. Scott, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom. Say one more time, the website that you mentioned, I dropped it in the comments, salesqlia.com. Go ahead and download the book that Scott very generously offering on his website. And this was a pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure too. It's just like, wind me up. I just keep going. So next time we can do like 8 hours together. I absolutely love this stuff. There's nothing I enjoy more than just like teaching the stuff and helping people just like you. So whether you're, you know, just getting your first SaaS startup, you're in great hands with Natalie and her group. I've watched videos, I've watched masterminds, I've been in her Facebook group. Like, there's some really great stuff in there. So pat yourself in the back for getting involved with her group. And if you, you know, aside from the work that she's already doing with you, if you would just want to get another perspective on things, grab a copy of the book, sign up for the email list. We can get you the assessment. And if there's a way for us to help you while you're working with her, that'd be great. But otherwise, it's been a hoot. I'm really glad to
absolutely
be able to meet your community.
I'm not
here.
A sales specialist, so that's why you are here. Now, I remember you were doing some weekly Q&A sessions. Do you still do them?
We were doing them weekly back after the first shutdown, the COVID shutdown, just to help people get through a lot of the anxiety that they were feeling and trying to figure out what actions to take. Now what we're doing are monthly events. So we do, last month we did a live Q&A. The month before we did an online training. Actually in September, we are going to run, was going to be a full 2-day online workshop to help teams build out their sales process for the rest of Q4 and into 2021. Yeah. So
awesome. Again, if you are in my group, go ahead, please share this information in the group. Okay. And then I'm sure lots of people are going to be really interested. I see a lot of great work. Thank you. Thank you. Chat, just really quick. Our mastermind group is today at 4:00. I know you were not able to join for the past few weeks. Maybe today is the day, but hey, everyone, thank you so much. And I look forward to our next call. Let's go.
Yeah.